About 33?
About 50. Yeah. 1933, I started to work for the museum. And after I got it there, then I had different jobs where I worked. I had to work on what they call a bar, cut steel. And then I worked there about 6 weeks, which I was a little too late for the job, so I had to go back to the office and they reported and they put me back on a different job, which I would work on what they call the normalizer. That's where they screened bad sheets out of steel, and then they had to run it through what they call a pickler. That was for the sheets that was good, that they run it through some kind of a solution that they could use that steel. And then from there, I worked in the, called Healing and Kneeling. That's where they had kilns made like a coffin. And they had to put the steel in there at least 24 to 48 hours. That was like heat treated. And then from there I worked over into the finishing room, where the finished steel was on a patent level, which was steel that they run different sizes where, for different like cars, or like making Dodge hood tops, and there was for truck hood tops, different parts of the body of a car. That's where we run through there. And then we worked cutting. Then if we worked as if we didn't make enough to make tonnage, we had to go out with the call labor wages, which labor was $3.75 a day. That's it.
Yeah. What was the picket line that you worked?
Well, as far as the picket line, we went one morning and we seen a line of men up by the gate. And they said anybody wanting to go into work was entitled to it. They had security to let us through. But they had a union then, and they all motioned to, we didn't like to cross a picket line. So we stayed on the side. Well, we stayed on the side with very, very few men that went in the plant to work. Well, which was entitled to go if you wanted to work, but I guess they turned around, they called us all scabs. Well, that went on for about a day or two, then it got to get worse, then they started to stop trucks from coming in to get steel. And that really, the heat was really turned on, and that started to get bad. And then I seen afterward, when I was there, when trouble was brewing, I didn't go in.
Stayed out. So then they wanted you to move you to where?
Well, after they got pretty well, they found out where the good workers were, and also they wouldn't have trouble with. They all gave us notices that they moved to Cleveland. I was going to go to Cleveland, move on to work. But I was just married not too long, and I didn't, anyway, I didn't care to move there, and I don't think the wife did, so I decided I didn't go. So that's where I went to that one.
They give everybody the opportunity to move?
No. Some of the troublemakers I had, they didn't want no part of it. Oh, they didn't want no part of it. Yeah.
There we go.
Well, you asked the question.
All right, now, what experience did you have with people?
Well, the experience that I had with, bootlegging days, I wasn't a bootlegger to make a living on, but I just had experience where I made one trip across with a person that I knew real well, but I was kind of young at the time, and I didn't know what it was all about, so I found out through experience after I made my first trip. When we went across over to Canada, was in the wintertime, and I said the federal was pretty strict at the time for the bootlegging days. So I went with a fellow that said about making big money, maybe 2 or 3 hours at a time, you probably can make $50 to $75, which was great money. So I went with this fellow one night to make a trip. I was supposed to be his helper. Well, we went across, and we did. He didn't even have a compass at the time that we went over to Canada. With an old Model T Ford, had a little box in the back that we could put about 20, 21 cases on. So I was supposed to be the helper, and he come to load up and unload, because you had to do it in such a hurry for no federal to see it. So I went across with him, and I asked as far as I was going with this old Model T Ford, I said, what is them planks that you got in the back? They were probably about 8 to 10 foot long. He said, we'll show you in a little while. So they got into a gap where the ice was separated. We laid these planks across, and we went across with our load, came back. I said, we didn't think too much afterwards about it. So after we made the first trip, well, it was interesting to see what good money, but we didn't have to realize we were young that we were going to run into the federal cost. So what we was working for was a big fellow that was supposed to be the payoff, and he was the one that distributed all the whiskey and stuff that was hauled across. And I would like to mention those names who it was, because they're all dead now. Then I tell them about another experience I had when we were bailing hay that was on Shinnebar Road. We were working for the Kuzner brothers, Bailey. There was three of us following, pitching the hay out of the mow onto the table of the baler. And the fellows were Levy Mather, myself, and fellow name of Bezak Cavanaugh, which he liked to drink pretty well. So it was on a Saturday afternoon, they asked us if we wanted to go over and bale about 6-8 tons to clean the barn out, which belonged to the Kuzner brothers. So when they got to near to the bottom of the mile, we put our pitchfork, we were picking back into some stones or like cement blocks. So after we got to the bottom, we found out there was a load of whiskey was put there quite a while ago, which the Kuzner boys didn't even know, and they owned the building. So at the time, when we were bailing there, we had this fellow that was supposed to be the head of the bootlegger, had the payoff. He come along, he seen that, he knew that we were bailing there, he knew that we were going to have trouble, they'd find that old whiskey. And the federal officers going up and down that road about 3 times a day, checking to find out if they could catch somebody. So what they did, he asked the Kuzner brothers that if they could take the hay, they'd be able to put it right back over on the mow again to cover the whiskey, and which we did. From then after that on, I didn't know what happened.
What was the gas rationing like in the Depression?
Well, the gas rationing was kind of rough on the start when we got started until they get set up that where they get accommodated, because we were farming. They only had the aid books out, and that was just enough to drive your car to go to the store or just make a few miles. But for farming, it was kind of difficult because you had to go to Monroe and fill out a form, and you had to go over to the courthouse, and I don't know if it was courthouse here that issued that they'd give you enough for the farm, they figured how many acres of working ground you had after they had a base, how much gas, and they wanted to know what kind of tractors you had, and they could almost base it like how many gallons you'd use, and ask for how many acres that you would farm. And the same way with the combine, we had to do all that. And as far as the cars, You didn't do too much transportation on the road, but after I was working at the time being at the Willow Rock, working in a defense plant, well, that was a little better deal there, but they had the amount of a little more gas, but the only thing is they'd like you to communicate that if you was all in the same area, they'd like to have you four or five people that take each your day of driving to communicate on saving fuel. But the bad feature was about it that when it changed shifts on you, that you didn't have the same fellows riding together. So we all had to break up and go and ask for gas rushes that we had to drive ourselves. And sometimes you had to work overtime and the other guy didn't. So when we went in to apply for gas tickets we had to have, well, we followed Avenue in there with Mr. Rogers, and he says, you'd be better, you fellows, to apply all separate, because he said you had split up shifts and you're working overtime, and he says, I don't see any reason why you can't get enough fuel to drive. But he says it's only going to be hard on you, because if you've got old cars, you ain't getting no new cars or anything like that. But he says that would help you out a lot if you could get enough fuel to drive. So we all filed separate, and as far as the gas we had, we all had enough gas that we got to.
You could buy no new cars at that time?
Oh, hell, they were, they stopped making them. See, that was that route plan at the time when we had to stay on the job till the last car come off the line, then we was sent over to Little Rock, the defense plant, where they were going to make the B-24. And when I got transferred from the roof to go to Little Rock, they didn't even have a roof on the plant yet. They just had steel work, and the only had thing that was done was the hydraulic building that was just finished, and we had to go to school for 6 months to learn about hydraulics. And the plant wasn't finished until about a year afterward, because it just had the steelwork, and to keep warm in the wintertime, they had coke barrels to keep warm. Then after the plant was done, then they started get stabilized where they was at different apartments put up in there. And, I think it was in 19, let's see, the first plane come off. Then they didn't know that the plane was ever going to fly, because they had so many things they had to change and make different brackets until they got it all okayed by the government that the plane was safe after it was built on. But the first plane, I don't think I'd care to ride on. Yeah, nobody's going to leave the ground.
Tires and everything else the same way during that time?
Oh, yeah. The bank, because I remember, in the bank, you talk about the Depression. It was pretty rough, too, because I remember my dad, when we were selling milk, he'd only get paid once a month. And when we got our milk check, and at the time, the bank was closed. And my dad says, how are we going to get this milk check cash if the bank isn't open? So a fellow by the name of Jim LeBeau in Newport, after the general was running the general store he owned there, and through a good friend of his, he'd cash our milk checks. He had the cash. Then he had some stock into the Newport bank, and then they asked him if they could double their stock at a time to get the bank to go on, and was going to pay a certain percent to the guy that had money, like checking or saving, to get some of the money. But then they said that they could double their stock. They started off, I think, with a 3-year period or a 5-year period. They pay so much each year till they have to reach 100%. But they never reached 100%. Some of them said that they were lucky if they got 75%. So I says, it was rough, and I says, nobody would write checks off because you couldn't cash them. The only thing is, cash was awfully hard to get. That was public depression.